Doing Parshas Bo, Tuesday night, Parsha summary. Our Parsha introduces a change from what we've seen until now. Our Parsha is where we're going to have the first mitzvah, and we're going to have a few mitzvahs in our Parsha. Yeah, I could eat and drink so much anymore. Our Parsha begins, continuing from last week's Parsha, with the Makos. We saw in last week's Parsha the first seven Makos. The Tzach, Adash, and Be, right? Dam Tzvardei Akinim, Arov Dever Shchin, Barad. We ended last week's parsha with Barad, with the hail, the miraculous hail. And our parsha begins with the warning that's given to Paro that there's more to come. There's Arbe. The next plague is going to be the locust, which are going to destroy everything that was there. God tells Moshe, come to Paro. I'm the one that made his heart heavy. That's why he's not giving it. I want this to be something that will be remembered for generations. You'll tell your children and your grandchildren. By the way, we have mitzvah of chinuch for our children and our grandchildren, not only our children. The mitzvah of chinuch extends to one's grandchildren as well. I want you to tell them over the great signs, the great miracles that I did in Egypt. Moshe and Aaron come to Paro. They tell him, look, God says, so when are you refusing to humble yourself before me, send my people, and let them serve me. This is something that we'll have to discuss. I don't think we'll get to it tonight. Why were they constantly asking to go out to serve God? Why didn't they just say, let my people free? It doesn't say that. God kept saying, let them come out, 3 days' journey into the desert, and serve me.
He wanted it to lead to the Egyptians chasing.
Okay, that's one answer. That God wanted the Egyptians to chase them when they didn't come back after 3 days. That's one answer. There are other approaches, but tonight we won't go into that. If you don't let them out, God's warning him, tomorrow I'm bringing locusts within your border. Everything will be covered with locusts. You won't be able to see the ground. And whatever was left from the hail, those trees that were still soft, that bent under the weight of the hail, whatever food was left is going to be destroyed by the locusts. They'll fill the homes. You're going to have a plague like you've never seen. From the time that people have been on the ground, no one's ever seen such a plague. And Moshe sees that Paro's officers are considering listening to him. He sees that they're thinking maybe they should really give in. So Moshe turns around and walks out. He wants them to have a chance to sway Paro. And that's what happens. His servants tell him, look, let them go. Don't you know, Egypt's almost decimated. So he sends messengers, Moshe and Aaron are called back, and Paro tells them, go serve your God, who's going? And Moshe tells them, everyone. Our sons, our daughters, our cattle, everyone's going. And he says, may God be with you. If I would send all of you the way you want, things are going to go bad. I know things are going to go bad. My stargazers see that there'll be bloodshed. No, the ones who serve the gods are the elders. Let the male old people go, the mature old male go, and they'll serve. That's what you're asking for. You're saying you want to serve God, so that's how you go. And then Moshe and Aaron are chased out from Paro. They're shamed. This time we see that they're chased out. God tells Moshe, raise your hand over the land of Egypt, and the Arbe, the locust, will come. Moshe raises his hand, and here we have the Pasuk describing what's happening. The Pasuk doesn't say suddenly locust came. The Pasuk says that God brought an easterly wind all day and all night. Remember, Moshe had told him tomorrow the locusts are going to come. And when Moshe stepped out from before Paro, God told him, raise your hand now. So what was the purpose of that? Why raise his hand now? So the Pasuk says, Moshe raised his hand and an easterly wind came all day and all night. And it lifted the locusts and brought them over the land of Egypt. So we have to ask ourselves, why is the Pasuk explaining the natural effects that brought on this plague? The Pasuk could have just said, like it did in all the other plagues that they just happened. Here the Pasuk stresses the natural effects that preceded the plague. The locust came, and as Moshe had forewarned, there was never a plague like this before, and there would never again be such a plague. Rabbeinu Hananel quotes that from the time of Moshe, locusts don't destroy within the land of Egypt, because the Pasuk says there would never again be such a thing. So So the literal translation means there'll never be such a plague in Egypt. But Rabbeinu Hananel seemed to have understood that there would never again be locusts harming the land of Egypt. The land became dark. There were so many locusts, and they ate everything. Whatever was left, they ate. Pharaoh quickly called Moshe and Aaron. He figured maybe there are some roots left, something. So he quickly called Moshe and Aaron, and he says, I've sinned to Hashem and to you. Remember, he shamed them. He chased them out from before him. So he said, I sinned to God, your God. Notice, now Elokeichem could be understood as, I'm not accepting him as my God. The Kuzari says that a person reaches a certain level of serving God, and then God is called his God. When people look at him, they see him as a representative of God in this world. He's a God-fearing person. He's a person that you could tell that God is his God. So according to that, it's not that Pharaoh is saying your God as opposed to mine, but rather he's giving Moshe and Aaron that level of honor that he recognizes that they could be people who are known as God's men. Please, this time, forgive me, Pharaoh says, pray to Hashem your God and he'll remove this debt from me. It's interesting. In last week's parasha, Moshe came in and he said, make it tough on me. When do you want this plague to leave? And Pharaoh said, tomorrow. So there are different understandings why Pharaoh said tomorrow in last week's parasha. One understanding says that Pharaoh thought, ooh, they're tricking me. They saw in the stars, they understood something that the plague is about to end. So they came in, they think I'm going to say now, and anyways it would stop now. So I'll test them, I'll say tomorrow. Another understanding says that Pharaoh was thinking, when's the first possible time? Tomorrow. Okay, you tell a person, when do you want this? And he says, tomorrow. He doesn't think twice, he thinks the first possible time. Pharaoh didn't realize that he could have just said now, and God would have stopped the plague then and there. Over here, Pharaoh says...
Sounds like the first one sounds better because...
It sounds like he doesn't recognize the power that Hashem can do anything at any moment.
Either that or he wasn't thinking. Or when you aren't thinking, sometimes you don't think to bargain for the best possible price.
Oh. I don't know, something's like bugging, you want it to stop, please, I want it to stop now. I don't know.
Sometimes.
Like he was just trying to be a...
Okay. Okay. So Moshe goes out and he prays to Hashem. Notice that Moshe doesn't pray when he's in front of Pharaoh. There are idols there. We don't pray next to idols. So he walks out and he prays to Hashem. And Hashem turns the wind. The westerly wind comes, a strong westerly wind. And he carries the arbe, this locust, out to the Yamsuf. And there was no arbe left. Mitzrim thought, at least we'll eat locusts. So they started pickling the locusts and preparing them to be eaten. They didn't have any other food. They didn't have anything else to eat. So God took out all the locusts from Egypt. Even the locusts that were in the pickle jars were taken out. So they were left very hungry. And now they had to spend all the wealth they had to try and import food, probably, because there's no food. The vegetation was destroyed. All growth was destroyed. Importers must have made a lot of money now. Pharaoh is still refusing. God hardens his heart and he doesn't let them go. And now, as was the procession until now, two makas with a warning, the third maka without a warning. We're up to the ninth maka, that's the third in the series of three. And God tells Moshe, raise your hand over the heavens and there'll be darkness over Egypt. V'yamesh choshech. So the Rishonim have different understandings what it means. Best is to know Rashi's pshat. Rashi quotes from Chazal that the darkness was a thick darkness. We're accustomed to thinking of darkness as the absence of light. We think that there's light, and just where there isn't light, that's where darkness prevails. And we say that God was Yotzer Or Uvorei Choshech. We say God gave shape to light, and he created darkness. So we treat them both as a creation. We say that in our prayers every morning. So Rashi says that this darkness was a darkness that could be felt. And our sages say that there were levels in the Makkah. 3 days of darkness and 3 days where they couldn't move. A guy was standing, he couldn't sit. A guy was sitting, he couldn't stand. We see that this darkness had a greater effect than just the absence of light, because otherwise they would have all just lit candles. And they didn't. So that's why all the Rishonim seem to go with this pshat, that it was some element of darkness beyond the regular darkness. whether, right, so the Ramban goes like you're saying, that it was some kind of black cloud, that even if they'd light a candle, it wouldn't help. But Rashi goes with the pshat that it was a thick darkness, that nothing they could do would overcome it, and they couldn't even move in this darkness. What was the purpose of this makkah? So we don't know what the purpose of any makkah is. We know that it's a sign. We're supposed to know it for our offsprings. We're supposed to know it so that we'll be able to tell our children, and it's part of the belief in God that we have. It's developing from the first makkah all year long through the 10th makkah, and its culmination is at Mount Har Sinai, where we stand at Sinai and God reveals himself. But we're getting closer and closer. We begin with the God that the Egyptians believed in, the Nile, is destroyed. The Nile turns to blood. And then God shows that he rules over the universe and the forces of nature. Frogs come in, frogs go out. And then we have lice, which even the warlocks of Paro couldn't do a stunt like that. They couldn't create lice like Moshe created. Then we have wild animals coming in from all over, and then animals dying, and no one could contain that. God controls life and death. Then we have boils. Even the warlocks are covered with boils. The people can't protect themselves. God is punishing on the people's bodies. We have hail, fire and water coming down from heaven, these huge blocks of hail, and miraculous hail. Hail where if you build a little hut, you won't damage you. You stand outside, huge blocks are coming, they destroy everything. God says whoever's in the house won't die. So what does it mean that they had houses made of brick? No. It was a special decree by heaven. God said whoever's in the house will not die. You can build a hut, you can build a sukkah with little straw on top. If you're in a house, you show that you fear God, that you believe what God said, that if you're in a home you won't be damaged, then you weren't damaged. So you have this miraculous hail coming down, fire with water coming down, and the Egyptians in their homes, whoever believed in God, brings their cattle in, brings their servants in, they all stay in the homes, and they don't get damaged. Miraculous hail, barot. Then we have locusts, a plague like never had happened before. Now we have darkness. We have darkness where the Egyptians can't see. And at this point, there were still Jews who didn't want to leave Egypt. It's not easy to go out, start serving God. It's much nicer to be a free man. You can marry whoever you want, live with whoever you want, divorce whoever you want. No rules, lawlessness, anarchy. It's difficult to think to become Jewish. It's difficult to think to leave the homeland. They grew up here. So a lot of Jews didn't want to leave. And during this makkah of Hoshech, many, many Jews died. God said, whoever doesn't want to leave is going to stay, but not alive. And so many Jews died at this point. And God didn't want the Egyptians to say, you see, they're just like us. The makkahs are hitting them, the makkahs are hitting us. So God made a plague of darkness where the Egyptians couldn't see what was going on. And during this time, the Jews were busy burying everyone. There are different opinions in the Medrash how many Jews died. The Pasuk says, V'chamushim aluv bnei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim. V'chamushim, so the root of the word chamushim either means chamush, armored, or it's chomesh, a fifth. So one opinion says that four-fifths of the Jews died. That means if there were 2 million Jews leaving Egypt, there were 8 million Jews dying during these 7 days of the Makkah of Choshech. So a lot of Jews were dying, and the other Jews were busy burying. We could understand why the Jews leaving Egypt thought they were leaving under God, who was a merciless God. God has to prove to them, God has to promise to them in next week's parasha, Kol ha-machala shosamti v'mitzrayim lo asim alecha. All the plagues you saw in Egypt, you saw me being a tough God, you saw me hitting the Egyptians again and again, a year long you see me doing things that hurt people. You should know, I promise you, whatever you saw there, I'm not going to do for you. Ki ani Hashem rofecha, I am Hashem, your healer. The Jewish people leaving Mitzrayim thought they were coming under God, but God's tough. God punishes again and again and again. That's all they see this whole year. So God promises them, he says, Ani Hashem Rofecha. God has to calm them down when they leave Egypt. That's why the first miracle we see after crossing the Yamzuf is that God brings them to water that's bitter, and God makes the water sweet, because they had to see that God could sweeten things, not only make things bitter, destroy the Egyptians. So now we have this Makkah of Choshech. During this Makkah, the Jews were instructed, our sages tell us, to go to the Egyptian homes and see where they're hiding all their wealth. well, through their homes, but the Jews didn't take a thing. You know, in New York, when there's a blackout, there's a lot of looting. The alarms won't work. The police can't see what's going on. Second, there's darkness. You see, the animal and people comes out. In Mitzrayim, the Jews had 3 days or 7 days where the Egyptians couldn't see anything. A Jew would stand next to an Egyptian and he could see everything, and the Egyptian couldn't see anything. And the Jews knew this. And nonetheless, the Egyptians saw after the Makkah of Choshech that the Jews hadn't stolen a thing from them. They had instructions to go through their cabinets to see where they're keeping their wealth, but they didn't take anything. So we can understand why after this the Egyptians started befriending the Jews. They had new respect for the Jews. Here the Jews, during this time, they didn't take a thing.
They had instructions to look through the cabinets and see their wealth?
Correct. We'll see why in a second. The plague ends and Pharaoh calls Moshe. He says, go serve your God, just leave your cattle here. I'm willing to let your kids go. Go. Moshe tells him, not only are we going to take our cattle, you're also going to give us cattle to bring a sacrifice. Now, really, we don't take cattle from a non-Jew to bring a sacrifice. But he was saying a term, not only are we going to go, even you're going to want us to go. In a term of exaggeration. So he says, everything's going. We're not leaving one foot in Egypt. And we don't know how we'll serve God. Till we get there, we don't know. Again, God hardens Pharaoh's heart. Pharaoh says, get out of here. I don't want to see your face again. The day you see my face again, you're going to die. And Moshe tells him, you're right. I won't come to see you again. I will not see your face again. Now, when the Makkah of Bechoros comes, when the firstborns are going to die, that's the next Makkah. So Pharaoh was a firstborn. Pharaoh got nervous. Says that Pharaoh ran to Moshe and Aaron. And he said, get out of here. He said, that's it, I give up, go. So there are different understandings as to what Moshe was telling him here. We know that Moshe was prophesizing. He said, I won't see your face again. One understanding says, I'm not going to come see you again. Next time you're coming to see me. That's one understanding. And the other understanding is that it's true. He said, I won't see your face again. Because when Pharaoh went to search for Moshe and Aaron, doesn't say he entered their homes. We know that they all sealed their homes that night. They all locked the doors and placed blood on the doorpost. So Pharaoh never entered his home. Pharaoh stood outside and yelled, get out, get out, I don't want you here. Or he sent messengers. When it says Pharaoh called them, so how does the king call someone? He doesn't literally go over there. Or he meant to say, you won't see me here again in your courtyard. Outside you might. Now, ordinarily, God doesn't appear out of Egypt. Out of Israel. You know that from the time the Jews entered the land of Israel, so the land of Israel got a level of holiness, and God didn't appear outside Israel. The exceptions are either someone who started prophesizing in the land of Israel can continue out of Israel, that's one understanding, or the Kuzari's understanding is that outside of Israel, a person can only have a prophecy about the land of Israel. So the Kuzari says that when Abraham has a prophecy, go to the Holy Land, he's having a prophecy about Israel. When Yechezkel is outside in Babylon and he's prophesizing about the land of Israel. That's the Kuzari's explanation. But there's also the understanding that if one begins in Israel, he could continue outside of Israel. And there's a Medrash Halacha called the Mechilta, which begins here. The Mechilta starts over here in Parshas Bo. And begins with this concept, that God doesn't appear outside the land of Israel. And God made an exception over here to appear in Mitzrayim, in Egypt, to take the Jewish people out of Egypt. Now even in Egypt, God was careful, so to speak, not to appear where they were serving idols. Moshe would leave Pharaoh's headquarters and then God would appear to him outside the city. Over here, Moshe wasn't supposed to show up again. So God made an exception and God appeared to Moshe and he told him, one more time, one more plague, and afterwards they'll send you out. Now, it's interesting that God has to say one more. We have a tradition that Moshe was carrying a staff that had the Rashi tables. That said on the staff, Detzach Hadash Be'achav. On the staff itself, it listed the acronym for the 10 plagues. From the Pasuk, to me it would seem that Moshe didn't know to understand that an acronym till after the fact. Because if he understood it, then why does God have to tell him one more? I don't know. That's my understanding. I didn't see anyone that says that, but that's what I think the pasuk indicates. So God tells Moshe, one more plague I'll bring upon Paro and upon the Egyptians, and then they'll send you. And it's interesting that the pasuk separates between Paro and the Egyptians. We find often that God speaks about the leader and the people. They're two separate factions. When I'll send you, I'll chase you out of here. I'll want you all out. Please tell the nation they should each borrow from their friends, the woman from her friend, silver and gold vessels. And God gave their favor in the eyes of the Egyptians, and they were able to borrow them. Now, why does God tell him, please ask the nation to borrow from the Egyptians gold and silver vessels? So one understanding says, God was saying, you know, Abraham's in heaven, and he's watching his kids now for 210 years suffering under the Egyptians. He's going to say, God, you kept one half of the deal. You had my children tortured. But what about the other half? You promised that they'd come out with great wealth. So please have them do this. Why did God have to beg for this? Because ordinarily when a person's in prison and you come and you tell him, tomorrow people are taking you out. Tomorrow we'll get you out of here and we'll give you great wealth. He says, leave the wealth. Let me out today. He just wants to see himself out. So the Jewish people are being told, one more plague, soon. You're almost there. We'll get out and you'll have wealth. And the natural response would be, let me out now. We'll leave the wealth. So God says, please ask them. They should all ask for this. They should all borrow gold and silver vessels. And our sages say that the Egyptians, even though they were friends, they'd say, you know, I don't have anything to lend you. And he'd say, no, I think you have something up there in the cabinet and over there. And then the Egyptian, you know, he honors the Jew now, so he'd be embarrassed and he'd lend it to him. Now, there are two understandings, or there are at least two understandings, there are more than two understandings here, what went on. One understanding says, the yishalum, they should ask one from their friend or from their neighbor, these gold and silver vessels. Lishol could be to ask. So to ask as a gift or to ask as a loan, the pasuk doesn't state, if the yishalum means to ask. So maybe they asked them for a gift and they felt bad, they gave it to them. The other understanding says that no, they borrowed these things from them. Now what about the return policy? Why did they have to borrow? Well, God wanted the Egyptians to chase after them. God wanted them to come after them to the sea and fall in the sea. These Egyptians had taken their children and thrown them into the Nile. God said, I want to pay them back. How do I ensure that the Egyptians chase them to the river? Take their wealth. So that's why God had it done this way. That's another understanding. Third understanding says these Egyptians were going to take over their land. They weren't going to pay anything for the land. A Jew leaves, he leaves behind his house. He's not going to take all his wealth with him. How much could you take when you're on the run? So they're leaving their houses, they're leaving their land. So God said, you borrow this gold and silver. And don't worry, those who have a claim on you, they'll work it out in the courts. They'll take it back from the land. You're leaving behind a certain amount of wealth, so they'll get what they deserve.
I think I read another rule.
So he had it as a loan.
So as a loan, yeah, that's why they also apparently borrowed clothes.
So Moshe tells Paro, so said Hashem, and this is an exceptional nevuah by Moshe, that Moshe could say, Ko Amar Hashem, like this God said. Only Moshe could prophesy like that. This is what God said. Kachatzos alayla, approximately at midnight, I'm going out through Egypt. Why does Moshe say Kachatzos alayla, approximately at midnight? So our sages told us, Lamed leshoncha, teach your tongue, lomar eini yodea, to say, I don't know, I'm not sure, approximately. Shema titvadeh v'teachez. Lest you'll say things as though you're sure of yourself, you'll say things with confidence, you'll speak accurately, and then people will see that you don't know things as accurately as you've said. So Moshe Rabbeinu was told by God, at midnight I'm going out through Egypt. But Moshe preferred to say approximately at midnight. Now one understanding says, Moshe Rabbeinu said, I know that God knows exactly when midnight is. And I know these Egyptians. They're going to sit there with their time and their stargazers, and they're going to try to figure out exactly what midnight is. And they might be off by a minute or two. They'll say a minute or two before midnight, ah, it's midnight, didn't happen. So why should I give them this opening that they should come and speak against God? I'll say approximately midnight, and then it will be approximately at midnight. They won't be able to say anything about that. Third understanding says that midnight changes. If you have an exact clock, so you know that depending on where you are, your place on the longitudinal lines, and every line could be broken down, where midnight is here is different than where midnight is where you're sitting. Every minute, if you're going to be accurate to the millisecond, as only God could be, is different depending on where you are. We know the great difference is we have time zones. But the truth is that within a time zone, you could break it down more. You could break it down to milliseconds. There's a difference. Now, only God could pinpoint the exact second where midnight is. So God made sure to hit Mitzrayim exactly at midnight at every part of the longitudinal lines. So every inch of Mitzrayim at a different second, which was midnight or millisecond. So that's why Moshe said, Kachatzos, approximately midnight. They can't figure out this difference when exactly midnight is at every home and at every place. They'll see that the plague is sweeping through Egypt. But the truth is that God is exactly on Chatzos in every home. Every firstborn is going to die. From the firstborn of Paro, that's supposed to take the throne, to the firstborn of the slaves, because the slaves would always rejoice that the Jews were being put down. And the firstborn of the animals as well, because the Egyptians served their animals. They think, oh, my animal, she escaped. She wasn't hit by the plague. She's powerful. My animal, they used to serve the animals. They wouldn't slaughter animals in Egypt. So God said, even the firstborn of the animals are going to be killed. And there's going to be great yelling throughout the land of Egypt. Never was there a night where people yelled like this, and they'll never be again. And for the Jews, no dogs are going to growl to a Jew. And from here, our sages learned that when dogs bark, it means that the angel of death is entering the city. Our sages said, it's not just in the movies. You see the dogs barking when
death is in your life.
Yeah, that's what our sages learned from this pasuk. God says, you'll recognize that I'm separating between the Egyptians and the Jews. And this is part of what's supposed to happen here. There's separation supposed to be occurring between the Egyptians and the Jews, and the minds of the Egyptians and in the minds of the Jews.
Some dogs bark for no reason, not when there's another dog across the street.
God tells Moshe, I know Paro won't listen. Now, Paro has what to lose. He's the firstborn. I don't think he necessarily understood that God said from his firstborn, but not including himself. God said from your firstborn son till the firstborn of the slave. He didn't say including you, Pharaoh. I'm not sure if God understood that point. Now, Moshe and Aaron, all the signs that they did were directly in front of Paro. Even though not every time we have a plague, it says that it was done in front of Paro. And some of the plagues, Paro wasn't forewarned, but all the plagues began in front of Paro. Even we said Makos Choshech, there was no forewarning. But they came in front of Paro, and then they made the plague begin. And now we start with our first mitzvah. God tells Moshe and Aaron in the land of Egypt, this month, the month of Nisan, is your first month. And now, on the first day of Nisan, I want you to be Mekadesh HaChodesh. What does it mean to do Kiddush HaChodesh? So we know that as the lunar month evolves, the lunar month begins with the moon being very, very small, and then the moon grows, and then the moon diminishes. Now, let's draw this for a second. Let's draw it in the air. Imagine for a second that we have a slither of a moon the first day of the month, and that slither of the moon is going to be, just a second, I'll tell you which side, it is going to be from, if we're imagining my right side is the east, and my left side is the west, so then the sun sets in the west, and directly after the sun setting, you see the moon, and the slither of the moon that you'll see is like on a clock from 12 o'clock to 6 o'clock. 12 o'clock to 6 o'clock through the 9. Okay, 12 o'clock, 9 o'clock to 6 o'clock. That slither of the moon is what will be seen. The next night, the moon will appear about 40 minutes earlier in the sky, meaning, it'll last for 40 minutes more in the sky. It'll be higher in the sky after sunset. And you'll see a larger section of the moon going again from 12 o'clock to 6 o'clock through the 9 o'clock. 12, 9, 6. A larger section of the moon. Every day of the month till the 15th, it gets fuller and fuller and fuller until on the 15th you see a whole moon. Now the same way on the 16th of the month, what's going to happen is you're going to be missing a small piece from 12, 9, 6. And then it's going to get smaller and smaller and smaller until on the last day of the month, what do you see? You see a slither of the moon that goes 12 through 6, 12 through 3 to 6. That's a slither, and that slither is going to be seen directly before sunrise on the eastern front. You'll see it for a half hour, 40 minutes, and then the sun rises and you don't see it. Now, why is it that we always see different sides of the moon? Because we always see the side of the moon that's near the sun. Meaning on the first half of the month, the sun sets and then you see the moon following it. The second half of the month, you see the moon only at the beginning of the night through towards the end of the night, and then the sun rises and you don't see the moon. Until the end of the month, you see that slither, 12, 3, 6, and it rises right before sunrise, and then the sun rises. And then the sun overtakes the moon, and that night the sun's going to set, and in the morning, right before sunrise, you might have seen 12, 3, 6. The next night, after sunset, you'll see 12, 9, 6. You'll see the other slither. That small slither, the first slither that you see, 12, 9, 6, that half of the moon, that's the new moon. You see the sunset, and now suddenly you see the 12, 9, 6 side. Up until now, you only saw the moon right before sunrise. And now, in the beginning of the month, you see the moon directly after sunset, and you see the other half of the moon. That's the new moon. When you see the new half, the other half of the moon. The other slither. Did anyone follow that?
Like this would be.
Okay, we'll do it on the blackboard.
Like this would be the new moon, right?
Give me just a second. We'll do it on the blackboard.
Okay.
So we get a marker. God says, HaChodesh HaZeh, this, every time we have in the Torah HaZeh, it's pointing to something, teaches us something. When you teach your kids, show them, hands on. hands-on education. When God tells them about what the new moon's going to look like, he shows them new moon. God tells Moshe, I want you to create a menorah, a special candelabra for the Holy of Holies, God shows him what's it supposed to look like. You want to teach someone something, the best way is to show them. We'll get to that. So God tells him this month is for you, the Jewish people, the first month. And now we enter a new phenomenon. The world begins on Tishrei, right? Tishrei is when the world was created. So until now, everyone's been thinking about Tishrei as the beginning of the year. And on the Jewish calendar, we're now going to have a split, a divide. Regarding certain things, we're going to treat Tishrei as the beginning of the year. Regarding how we count years, right? Tavshin Samach Vav, the year began in Tishrei. Regarding Yovel, Shemitah, when does the year begin? For Truma, for Meiser, we know we count the years of Shemitah. So that goes by Tishrei. That goes at the beginning of the year, what we call the beginning of the year. But regarding months, how do we count months? So that's with Nisan. And then we have a concept called Tkufot, that we figure out when the seasons are supposed to be. And this has halachic relevance for figuring out when we're going to make a leap year and how we'll figure out the months, which month is going to be 30 days, which 29. So figuring out everything with the constellations, that goes by Nisan. And that was introduced here. God says this is the first month. And according to some opinions, this is a mitzvah to count our months from Nisan. That's why some people don't like writing the Gregorian date with numbers, because they say we have a mitzvah that the first month is supposed to be Nisan. We're always supposed to count months from the time we left Egypt. That's a special mitzvah. When the Jews came back from Babylon, they said the prophet had told us that we're going to view the redemption from Babylon as greater than the redemption from Egypt. So they thought that the prophet had said the redemption is going to be greater than the redemption from Egypt. So the prophet didn't specify which redemption. They thought he meant the redemption from Babylon. When that redemption didn't turn out to be so great, we had the second temple, but it was ultimately destroyed, then we understood that the prophet didn't mean that redemption, but rather he meant the redemption that's still to come. That's going to be the third temple, or when Mashiach comes. So they understood that they're supposed to institute remembrances for the redemption from Babylon, so they changed the names of the months. Until the time of the second temple, we would call them by numbers. The first month was Nisan, the second month was Iyar, etc. They were called the first month, second month, third month. Certain months had nicknames, but in general, they were called the first, second, third month. When they came back from Babylon, they said, we have to institute a new remembrance for our redemption from Babylon. So they gave the months new names, and those are the names we have today. The names that we have, Tammuz, the names of the months, they came from Babylon. They brought them with them, and they instituted that as a remembrance for the redemption from Babylon. And now God tells Moshe a special mitzvah, the mitzvah of the Korban Pesach, the Paschal offering. And we have to discern between the Korban Pesach in Mitzrayim and Korban Pesach that was commanded for every generation to bring. The Korban Pesach in Mitzrayim was exceptional in that it had a few special commandments. One of them was that on the 10th of the month they were supposed to take the animal, specifically on the 10th of the month, and prepare it for the Paschal offering. Second commandment that was exceptional for Pesach Mitzrayim was that they were commanded to eat it quickly. Eat the Pesach quickly, you're in a rush. They're not going to leave Egypt till the next afternoon, but they have a special commandment, eat it in a rush. They have a special commandment to take from the blood of that Korban Pesach and smear it on the doorposts. So those are three exceptional commandments for that Korban Pesach. And here the Jewish people are told, you're uncircumcised, you're arelim. In order to bring Korban Pesach, a person has to be circumcised, all his children have to be circumcised, all his servants have to be circumcised, you must circumcise yourself. And our sages say that they had the blood from the Korban Pesach and the blood from their bris milah, and they dipped the special three clumps of grass, azov, hyssop grass possibly, they dipped it in the blood and they'd smeared around the door, and that's what the prophet says, Ve'evor alaych, I passed over the Jewish homes, Ve'erech, and I saw you mitboseset bedamayich, you were with the blood, Va'om alaych, I said to you, bedamayich hayi, I said to you, you lived because of your blood. Va'om alaych, and the prophet says again, bedamayich hayi, why do we say that twice? Because there were two bloods there. There was the blood of the Pesach offering, and there was the blood of the Bris Milah. We have to talk a lot more about this parsha, we didn't finish it yet, but... We're out of time. It's time for Maghrib.